Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Happier Happy Hour, and I am so happy for an excellent and timely guest. We've got Maggie Dunn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, attorney, economist, friend of the Devil's Advocates. And Maggie Dunn, I've got breaking news as you join us on the air today, coming from the Wisconsin State Legislature. Apparently, there is a shared revenue deal being reported by Civic Media's own news director, Terry Bell. The shared revenue deal is in place. Assembly GOP just held a presser. No word yet from the Assembly Dems. They don't need the Dems. All communities except Milwaukee are getting 15% increases. Milwaukee gets a 10% increase in shared revenue. Got to stick it to Milwaukee. Milwaukee's sales tax increases are still subject to referendum, and the GOP's compromised on local referendums. You can have local advisory referendums, but only on fiscal items. You know, not things like weed or whatever. Although I think you could twist that into a fiscal referendum. Maggie Dunn, welcome back. You are probably well aware of what's going on at the state capitol in your role for Milwaukee County. Any early comment on this reported deal amongst the Republicans?
Yeah, we expected a bill out of the assembly that addresses a lot of these different issues. And it's important to keep in mind that there's really two elements to the bill on a really high level. The first is trying to correct the shared revenue formula for all local governments statewide. Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. It stands as that cheese stands alone, if you will. It is one of the most restrictive legal frameworks for local government funding in the country. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Marionette, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick, Ashland, it ain't working. Local governments are hurting statewide. So the first element, and it's widely acknowledged both by folks on the left and right of the aisle, that the shared revenue formula simply has not been working for a very, very long time. I think the fiscal crises in Milwaukee City and County have helped bring that issue to a head. Those fiscal crises are going to be hit by other communities, outstate communities, rural counties. That's not an if, it's a but when under the current legal ways that local governments are funded. That's the first part. That's about shared revenue. Shared revenue simply means the revenues that are generated out of local communities, income, sales, property taxes, et cetera, go to the state with some exceptions, and then some of that revenue is returned to those communities under a very complex formula. I'll just say this about shared revenue. One, very, very limited means for local communities to raise revenues in this state. Again, one of the most restrictive in the country. Two, it hasn't been tied to inflation. I'll just say that again. It hasn't been tied to inflation. Wow. So just like everything else that costs more over time, and certainly in these last few years, local governments are under an extraordinary pinch to just continue their basic services. So that's the first part. The second part is a sales tax. And as I understand it, the sales tax for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County are being considered and proposed separately within the bill, meaning the city would have to conduct its own referendum and so would the county. The city's potential sales tax would be 2%. The county's would be 0.375, so less than 0.5%. Those sales taxes would be dedicated to help shoring up the city and the county's pension. But a dollar spent from the sales tax or generated from the sales tax that helps shore up our pension is a dollar that's available within our budgets each year to help sustain absolutely community essential services like transit, like the court system, like highway patrol in the city, police, all sorts of things. So on balance, the context that I always want to give people is Republicans control the state legislature. That means that there will be elements in any proposed revenue solution that comes out of Madison that folks here in Milwaukee will probably have pretty strenuous objections to. That's the political reality. And I don't think it's a mistake that, you know, the city of Milwaukee especially is really within a year or two of true financial crises, right? They would be looking at a $150 million hole, that is the city of Milwaukee, next year in terms of pension payments that they would have to cut out of their budget somewhere else. So to those that say, yes, let's just veto this out of hand, we're a long ways from seeing a finalized bill. The Senate has not introduced a bill. Those bills have to be consolidated and unified. There's negotiation that occurs there. There's then the governor's veto pen and partial. So there's lots that has to happen still. But for those that say this is Republicans shoving things down a Democrat's throat for southeastern Wisconsin, yes, and what is your alternative proposed solution? And shouldn't we be focused on trying to negotiate the best deal that we can for the city and the county? Because without this revenue fix and the sales tax specifically for the city and the county, boy, we as community members here in southeastern Wisconsin will really be in a pickle.
Megan Dawn, 10%, is that going to be sufficient? Milwaukee gets less than all other communities, apparently, at least numerically, as a percentage. But does a 10% increase, does that get you anywhere close to the gap that currently exists in city and local and county governance in Milwaukee?
Yeah, so looking at a shared revenue increase of 10%, that's a material increase. Of course, the city and county's budgets are amongst, City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County's budgets are amongst the largest in the state on just an absolute dollar basis. So those are significant additional dollars coming into our local government coffers that are completely and separate from any sales tax that could be potentially applied here. We can have an argument all day long about whether or not Milwaukee should be getting 15 or 20% increases. I'd sit here and tell you, if you look historically at what southeastern Wisconsin and Milwaukee County has returned to Madison in terms of revenues that basically account for the entirety of the state budget surplus, economic arguments can be made very easily that both Milwaukee County and the city should be seeing larger shared revenue increases. But that's not the political reality. And I think having to address the fact that we've got outstate assembly members that simply wouldn't be able to sell it to their constituents or justify a vote in favor of it is the reality. I do want to dispel some misinformation that I've heard callers here on your program and others on this network put out there. I want to be really emphatic here. Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee are not takers from the state. We give more to the state than we receive. I don't care if you're talking about the city or the county. We are an economic engine without which this state would suffer. So asking for our fair share of the revenues that we produce that help subsidize state government, frankly, is not inequitable. And it helps every community across the state by ensuring that the economic engine and heart of Wisconsin continues to be a vibrant and business-friendly environment. So I want to be really clear about that. People get that wrong all the time. It's simply false. We give more to the state than we get back. And in large part, that's why the state's sitting on a near $8 billion surplus.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got our five-tool Maggie Dawn, those that don't maybe know baseball, five tools means she's got all the tools. And Maggie, I would just respectfully ask, you got an econ degree as well. So when you're speaking to the economic issues, it's not just as Milwaukee County Corporate Council, although that position seemingly would qualify your answers, but also you're speaking as someone with an economics degree. So I find you far more qualified to offer an opinion than, let's say, CJ.
Listen, I think those are really important questions that people ask, which are questions about equity and fairness and all those things. And I don't mind someone asking the question, but presuming to know the answer when you haven't really looked at any of the data really presents a false narrative that frankly has some racial dog whistle overtones to it.
Right.
And I think we need to step away from that and step away from the outright politicization of this question. Every single family in this state wants a good public school system. They want to safely go back and forth to work. They want to be paid a fair wage for honest labor. They want to know that their garbage is picked up, that their streets aren't riddled with potholes. These are issues that have no party. This is about human values and what we all want in our communities. We want viable park systems, good and safe environments for our children to attend school in, and effective education. So these are not partisan issues, and reducing this to some tired old tagline about makers and takers, frankly, is not only wrong, it's divisive, and it doesn't help us all address what every local community and every local government in this state needs, and that's a fairer revenue formula to help provide the essential services that every resident in this state deserves.
Amen, sister. Maggie Dawn, do we know this new legislation being proposed by the Republican Assembly here in the state of Wisconsin, does it factor in inflation going forward?
Yes, so there on both, let me start with sales tax because that's really easy. A sales tax by its very design encompasses inflation because as the price of goods go up, obviously you're going to generate more sales tax. And yes, for the first time, the shared revenue formula is in the state. That's my little dog saying hi. The shared revenue formulas in the state are going to include an inflationary adjustment. Ooh, it's about darn time, isn't it?
Wow, some forward thinking here by the Republicans in the state of Wisconsin.
Cost of living increases? What's that? Come back, more Devil's Advocates. The finest of guests. She is Maggie Dawn, economist, attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates, dog mama.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, attorney, economist, friend of the Devil's Advocates. Thank you, Maggie. Always great to talk with you. I'm glad to see we're making some motion forward here in the state of Wisconsin on shared revenue. But on a national perspective, we have this debt ceiling negotiation going on right now, counselor. If you put on your economist hat, wonder what your sense is. If you're going to read the tea leaves, Maggie, do you think we're going to default? Do you think we're going to come through and make a deal? And will it be clean?
The first thing I want to say is Donald Trump is an extraordinarily irresponsible person when it comes to, frankly, the global economy. And his comments during the CNN town hall were reprehensible related to the debt ceiling. They're indefensible, and one could argue they're immoral. And the reason that I say immoral is that what will happen, and maybe we should start with understanding, like, people know that there's a debt ceiling, but what is default and how do all those things work together? And one of the things that I like to do is reference the musical Hamilton. Everybody's familiar with Hamilton, and one of Alexander Hamilton's great accomplishments was actually permitting and arguing and eventually winning the argument that the United States should be able to issue debt to help finance governmental operations. This was key, in effect, to how we were able to win some of those very early wars, because you need money to fight wars. And so what the Constitution requires is that Congress has to approve the issuance of debt. And in the early 20th century, they put in place what is called a debt limit, which allows the federal government to issue debt up to that point. And that was to avoid the federal government having to come to Congress every time it needed to issue new treasury bills or bonds to finance their operations. Why are these debt issuances needed? Well, the US government does not generate enough revenue to fund all of its cash needs. So throughout the year, we're constantly issuing new treasury bills and bonds. And that is why we need debt ceiling increases with some regularity, right? Because debt doesn't go away. You have to service it. You have to pay interest and principal on it. So we hit the debt ceiling for 2023 back in January. We are now coming, and once you hit the debt ceiling, then what you're doing is sort of cash flow management and debt service management and accounting tricks to keep enough cash on hand to fund the daily cash needs of the federal government. That is quite a trick. And as we get further and further along, default literally means when, as a technical matter first, and then as a very real matter, we run out of cash to pay our daily cash needs. And this can have cascading and catastrophic impacts for regular Americans, anybody that receives a Social Security check, Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, every single worker within the federal government, our military, all of those expenses that require cash payments, it becomes quite problematic very, very quickly. At the federal government's, what are their tools to help deal with that? You've heard Janet Yellen, who's the Treasury Secretary, talking about emergency measures. It's basically accounting tricks to try to keep cash on hand and keep a technical default from occurring on the books. But once you get up to a certain point without issuing any new debt, we will run out of money. That's when you default and you aren't able to make payments on the debt that is already outstanding. And if and when the country actually runs out of cash, the government has to make a decision about what expenses they're going to pay. And so you face very harsh realities of, do you continue to fund the military? Do you reduce Social Security payments? Do you not pay federal workers and you shut down the federal government? In which case, federal parks and basic federal services are no longer available for Americans.
Maggie, what do you... Sorry to interrupt, sister,
go
but
ahead.
Otherwise you'll keep talking. Joe Biden, the president of the United States, some say under the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, we cannot default on our debts, and therefore he has the inherent power to, what, issue a $1 trillion coin if necessary. There is a means, according to some, but that would certainly throw us into some sort of constitutional crisis. But if the alternative is a financial calamity, you know, which is worth, frying pan or fire, Maggie Dawn?
Well, the constitutional crisis is one. By issuing a $1 trillion coin, you eventually devalue and destabilize U.S. currency in a really material way. Now, the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency of the world, and it has been the reserve currency of the world for the entirety of the United States' existence, but more so in recent history, because we have never in the entire history of our nation defaulted on our debt. And that's really important to remember. We have had very difficult fiscal times in the past. It has only really been an artifact of modern political brinksmanship that you see Democrats and Republicans trying to hold the global economy and frankly, poor people hostage to extract political compromise. If Republicans want to cut the federal budget in drastic ways, fine, make the case to do that, win the argument, win a presidency, and go ahead and put your policies into effect. You do not do it by holding the entire global economy hostage, by shirking your responsibilities to your most vulnerable constituents, those that live exclusively on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. If those checks get cut, people will starve to death. They won't make rent payments and they will be evicted. And these effects, should we actually reach technical default and then cash flow default, will cascade and accelerate. We've never seen it happen. So I would argue anything other than doing what is morally right here and also economically sensible and reasonable is a failure to govern by Republicans led by their erstwhile McCarthy, who apparently is willing to, you know, sell us all down the river for MAGA hat wearing extremists.
Now, I want to know whether or not that's going to completely crash the Dow and the entire economy. But I guess we're going to have to ask you on the other side of the break. Maggie Dawn, economist, attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates. She's a triple threat.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A happier Wednesday happy hour. We got a fine guest, Maggie Dawn. She stuck around. We appreciate her doing so. And we got some fine programming coming up around the network. Brewers first pitch tonight, 6:45 p.m. on WISS, our Brewers flagship station. Also on WRCE, radio from the center. Richland Center, that is. Also, a little bit later, right here on WMDX and WAUK and a few other stations, the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza Hellenbrand and Kristen Voss. They'll come up at 7, Native Roots Radio in the interim. But soon, Dom, like summertime, there's going to be a shifting of the lineup, and it will incorporate the once and future queen of Milwaukee and statewide radio, Maggie Dawn. I don't know if we've officially announced, Maggie, but you're coming back to the airwaves.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Very appreciative to you and Sage that you're willing to give me some time to talk about these kinds of things every day with people. I've always had a problem with how news is reported. Not that there's anything wrong with the Fourth Estate innately, but it's so transactional, right? And nobody explains like what the debt ceiling is or what default means. Like people have to go out and really search for that information, and trying to explain to folks and share and hear from other people about, is this important to you? Do you understand it? Maybe I can offer a little bit about why it might, you might want to pay attention to some of this, and just demystifying government is really important to me. I think a lot of existentially and historic things are happening right now in our government. And so I'm very, very humbled to be asked to try to add a little bit to the dialogue here in Wisconsin.
Now, Maggie Dawn, if you had a show starting, let's say tonight, and it will not, but it's coming up in the summer, like think early June, but would you lead with the nothing burger that was the Durham report? This seems like some guy slapping down a lot of his opinions, unsupported by, let's say, charges, indictments, or evidence. But what's your opinion, Counselor?
Yeah, first of all, absolutely mystifying, you know, at a cost of over $6 million to American taxpayers, not a single conviction. The lawyer that he did take to court, a little weak, he lost two cases. And basically, John Durham added nothing to what the FBI's own inspector general had already recommended years ago.
Isn't this epic failure of Durham, sir?
Even podcaster Steve Bannon said it was an epic failure because there were no charges. And even if this is your ideology, you've got to have court cases to push the narrative.
No, you don't. For a propaganda piece, you don't need any of that, Maggie. All you got to do is say, hey, look, we got this. Durham did this report, and oh, my goodness, it shows the Biden crime family and Hillary all along. And, you know, they're going to say that anyway, even without the evidence, even without the charges, even without the facts. So my question, Maggie, how do you, as media, how do you address that particular part of it?
Well, I think, at least for my piece, you know, taking an hour or more to take up certain portions of the Durham report and just go through it. And you have to start with the initial framework here, right? This was a political prosecutorial investigation, a political prosecutorial investigation that was supposed to investigate a political investigation. It's the investigators about the investigators about the investigators. And the litmus test for whether or not that is legitimate is its results. And here, there's no question, if you want to put Robert Mueller's work up against this guy, there's no question. So many people went to prison as a result of Robert Mueller's work, right? We continue to effectively see some of the ripple effects of that. Bill Barr dispatched Durham to effectively dig up dirt. And listen, as someone that works in government, I always remain vigilant about my office or my work being used for political aims. Every single person who is a government worker, a public servant of any integrity will resist that, will resist the weaponization of their work to serve individual power grabs and political aims. I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts, it has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath regarding when we take on this kind of work. The Durham report is a blemish on Mr. Durham himself. It's a blemish on Attorney General Barr, who's tried to insulate himself from the Trump presidency. And it's shameful. It's as shameful as the things that it claims are shameful within the report. It is a weird sort of gaslit, slipstream, weird alternate reality. I hope John Durham does not sleep easy at night.
Maggie Dawn, our fine guest, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, economist, friend of the Devils. Well, in your role of friend of the Devils, I got a little story to tell you. Saturday night, I went to the Pfister. We had a little event in Milwaukee. I wasn't feeling good. Went down, took a nap, woke up 2 hours later, missed the event, but now I'm ready to party, right? I'm down at the Pfister bar in the lobby, and I bumped into this guy that's a doppelganger of Derek Van Orden. And I said,
Van Orden.
And he's literally wearing a faux congressional lapel pin, something of, I'm not saying it's Van Orden, but enough, there's something he's wearing there. Like it could be a committee pin or something.
Right.
So I approached, we ended up talking. And as it turns out, not only does he look like the man, he had hosted Derek Van Orden the night before. And he had brag photographs to prove it. And he was a richy, rich sort of guy. He had a very nice custom suit and his wife had a very expensive dress on. And I assumed he was a donor sort of Van Orden's coming to his house. And I said to him, you know, because he said to me, now this is the fine, upstanding, courageous sort of American that, you know, this nation is built on. And I said, well, I find your friend to be a bit of a coward, sir. And from there, it only got worse as I started hammering him with invective and profanity and eventually spittle and called him an insurrectionist bastard or something to that effect. And he said, we're not here. Like Scott Walker used to end our press conferences when I asked too many tough questions. Maggie, is that the right approach? If you're like an insurrectionist donor buddy rich guy and you're hanging out trying to look like the guy, should I hammer you after cocktails at the Pfister, or is that not going to win hearts and minds?
Well, you know, Mike, if you're itching for a fight, that's a good way to get one.
I'm always itching for a fight, sister. You know that.
I'll say this. Sometimes, you know, confronting people with harsh realities or a completely different framework is useful. I think someone that's raising money for someone who is willing to engage and entertain insurrection in this country is likely not worth your breath nor your spittle. I certainly would not choose to waste my time on someone that finds no moral, ethical, or constitutional impediment to supporting those that wish to overthrow and interrupt the peaceful transfer of power in this country. It's shameful. It's an embarrassment. And the fact that the guy is trying to look like him and carry that off and wears this as a point of pride puts him outside of my realm of those that are able to engage in meaningful discourse on these issues. So I would have said, thank you very much, but bye. Well, maybe I'll take that back. Maybe I would have tried to extract a few really expensive Johnny Walker Blacks from the fellow and then been on my way.
Folks are listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's Maggie Dunn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, sticking around for the hour. We do appreciate it. Speaking of insurrection and overthrowing the government, I want to get your sense. Rudy Giuliani served with a civil lawsuit, $10 million, lots
salacious
of
allegations.
Oh my God, Maggie, I couldn't believe you sent me the text. That it's quite stunning. But of course, the takeaway for me, sex aside, Rudy Giuliani claiming to this the victim here, the person who filed the suit, that he was selling or would sell pardons with Donald Trump for $2 million apiece. And of course, he would get a chunk of that as well. Maggie, I want to get your sense. Where do we go from here with Rudy Giuliani? And do you think this is something that is going to be investigated by DOJ?
I think it needs to be, and I'm sure Giuliani's defense will look something like this. To this infantile, not credible woman, it appeared as if I was selling pardons for $2 million. I was just putting people together that might have aligned interests. You know, this is the way this works. And to a degree, Mr. Giuliani is not incorrect. Political favors and the way that our government works and doesn't work in many ways is just like this. It's infused with favor trading. Right. And I don't mean favor trading in terms of legislative compromise that's done out in public. Right. I'm talking about selling of access. And this fundamentally is what I think makes me so uncomfortable about the Donald Trump apologists, because what I don't hear from people on the left side of the aisle is, oh, well, whatever crime, if there was one, that Hunter Biden committed, we'll just ignore that. What I hear from people on the left is go ahead and investigate the heck out of it, because to date, we have seen not a shred of direct evidence that anyone did commit a crime, and they've been at it for quite some time. So you've got two different camps that are responding to similar allegations of corruption in completely different ways. One camp, the camp on the left and Democrats, are saying, go ahead and investigate the heck out of it and press charges if those charges are merited by the evidence. The other side of the camp is saying, wait a minute, what about those guys? And don't ask us any tough questions. That is hypocritical in the extreme. And with someone like Trump and his co-conspirators like Mr. Giuliani, who are willing to engage in any level of favor trading and in fact extorted a country, meaning the Ukraine scandal, the scale of that can so pervert our systems and the way that government should operate that it becomes very hard to ever recover from. I think that's why so many of us that care deeply about government, deeply about accountability and transparency, are so frightened by the prospect of Donald Trump in 2024.
844-967-2789. We're going to sneak in a phone call. A patient, Lynn from Oconomowoc, say hi to soon-to-be host Maggie Dawn.
Yes, I'm excited about being able to tune in to Maggie Dawn very soon. And I have one question for all of you regarding the failure to raise the debt ceiling. We know who the losers are. But who are the winners? Are they the uber wealthy? And what are they doing now to prepare to stick it to the U.S. and world economy? Are they short selling stocks? Are they dumping their treasury investments? What are they doing?
Excellent question, Lynn. Maggie, I'm hoping you got a better answer than me or Dom would.
Yeah, I think we all can weigh in here. One, yes, short selling, of course. You're going to see stock market constriction. A lot of folks that take very rigorous volatility measures, which impacts sort of writ large global economic health, you know, we're looking at if we reach actual cash flow unavailability, that unemployment would surge above 12% in the first 6 months. So yeah, you're looking at short sellers. Treasuries will actually hit a deep discount in pricing. So those that have incredible amounts of cash on hand, read the wealthiest, are always able to effectively speculate, because it's not speculation when you know what's going to happen in the economy when these things have occurred, and they've occurred in our near-term history. So yes, the scale of losers here, it's every poor person, every middle American, everyone that works for a living. The winners, yeah, that's the top 1% of the 1% with enormous cash on hand to effectively speculate into the market.
And performative Republicans looking to raise cash.
Percent of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. 844-967-2789.
I was wondering if our triple threat five-tool star player, Maggie Dawn, had abandoned ship. But no, there she is. She's back. She's just hiding from us. Maggie, how you doing?
Well, my dog got into my, the actual box spring of my bed and was like crawling around in there. So, you know, puppy motherdom is really interesting.
It is a thing, Maggie.
For sure.
Apparently you haven't heard of crating. You can put the dog
in her crate all day. I can't put her back in there when I'm home and she can hear me.
She can. Clearly she can. We can all hear you. You're on live radio with the Devil's Advocates. Some call us the greatest radio show ever, but we got second place to you, Maggie, at the WBA Awards. So if you come back to the airwaves, will you bring the trophy back?
No, I'll keep that in my home. And every time you come over, I'll have to point it out and have it in a prominent position.
Well, the first time will be the first time. Maggie Dawn, we went to break. I think Republicans are being performative. I mean, they often are, but I truly think this is replaced governance on the right. And I think we've got some sound of McCarthy, the speaker. Is now a good time for this? Do you want to play this game, Dom, or not?
Yeah,
right now?
I think, and Meg, if you will indulge us, I heard this yesterday live. Speaker McCarthy coming out after the discussions with the White House and the team about, you know, the debt ceiling, and it kind of spun into, as he was doing the press giggle, questions about George Santos and this vote that went on today. McCarthy had some things to say. Maggie, I'd like to play it for you and the audience, and we could talk about this. If you would, Evan, let's start with cut number one, McCarthy yesterday.
Look, I think the George Santos indictment is very serious. I also know in America you're innocent to proven guilty, but I don't want to sit around and wait. So what I would like to do is move this to ethics. I think I would like the House to take up this work and look at it, and if it rises to that occasion, then...
Send it to ethics. That's the big plan. Oh, but it gets better. Let's hear more. Cut number two.
We just had a report come out from Durham. What does that say about Adam Schiff? He lied to the American public. Should he be expelled from Congress as well, taking Congress and America down through the path that he did, lying to us? So I think these accusations are very serious. I have a very concern about George Santos. So what I do firmly believe is, just in the foundation of this country, you got to have a process. So I'm going to ask that the ethics get look at this and don't do a short time basis. I mean, don't do a long time basis. I think we can look at this very quickly and come to a conclusion on what George Santos did and did not do through ethics, a safe bipartisan committee, equal number of Republicans and Democrats. And I think that's when you bring it back to Congress, and if it rises to the ability to.
He's going to hang on to the vote as long as he can. But notice the performative politics there, sliding in the Durham, sliding in and mispronouncing Adam Schiff's name. We have a little more. Let's keep going. Cut number three.
I would like to refer this to ethics. I'll have a conversation with Hakeem. I would like the ethics committee to move rapidly on this. I think there's enough information out there now that they could start looking at this. And I think they could come back to Congress probably faster than a court case could.
To be clear, are you saying...
All right, cut number four, McCarthy from yesterday.
No, I'm raising the question to you. If the Democrats keep this priority, which they haven't held to their own members in the past, right? And I think for Congress to work properly, just like every American, you should have due process, right? Because now what are we finding with the Durham case, right? The Democrats rose and wanted to impeach President Trump based upon a made-up Russia collusion, where it was pushed in this Congress by Adam Schiff. They actually changed the rules of Congress not to do impeachment through judiciary. They went to Adam Schiff's committee. Adam Schiff went on television and said, I have proof, and lied to the American public, and he took this country down for 4 years, spending millions of dollars, but at the same time disrupting democracy. If you really care about democracy, can you lie and make a false report to take a president down, going against what the voters have voted for, and you stay in office? That raises a serious question.
Yes, so how at all is that analogous with 13 federal indictments felonious against George Santos? I mean, we're really going in the weeds here, aren't we?
I know. More projection from the speaker. I know it's a lot to absorb there, Maggie, but speaking on the Durham report, what was your sense after hearing that?
Speaker McCarthy is a lying sack of blank. I mean, to engage in that level of misstatement, his statements are not supported by the historical record at all. This is gaslighting of the entire country. It is accusing those who seek to hold you and your party and George Santos accountable. It's accusing them of the same thing. What? That's just false. I'm sorry. Name me a Democratic candidate who has won office that has ever been accused of the volume of lying and fraud that George Santos has. It doesn't exist.
Cut number six. Play it for the Maggie Dawn and the people.
Well, there's been a number of members in the past who've been indicted, especially on the Democrat side, and I never saw somebody raised to remove them from the House. And really, if you are now raising the question of this, because they were moving this even before the indictment, I think when the indictment has been put in place, I think the House should take actions right now. I think we should have ethics take the work to seriously look. These are serious accusations. But I also think everybody in America is able to have due process, just like Mr. Santos would be able to do with court.
Is your brain going to explode? You look like you're on scanners.
First of all, I want to point this out. We all stumble over our words, but when you are as inarticulate and all over the place as McCarthy is in those cuts, it tells you he doesn't believe a word of what he's saying. He is talking in riddles and enigmas wrapped in a puzzle that no one can discern because it has no relationship to what is going on this plane of existence here on the planet Earth.
Cut seven, play it, Ebone, play it. There's no time. Rather hear the Motley Crue on the way out. The finest of guests, economist, soon to be talk show host, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, friend of the Devil's Advocates, Maggie Dawn. Thank you so much. The rest of you, stick around. We got more fine programming. Native Roots Radio, up to the Empowered Caregivers with Kristen Vost and Liza Hellenbrand. Keep it locked right here, Civic Media.
Thank you, Maggie.
Bye, guys.
Diligently together in a bipartisan article. I've been for a long time.